Well, if you have a strong desire to become a dairy or a livestock farmer, this school that we're going to be talking about should give you a head start in that whole process. And we'll be visiting about the Wisconsin School for Beginning Dairy and Livestock Farmers with two guests, Dick Cates, who's director, and Jennifer Taylor, who's assistant director with the UW-Madison's Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. And the school is a training and mentoring program. And we'll talk about what it emphasizes and visit with them. And certainly you can join in with your questions and comments, too, as we talk farming with them. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Jennifer Taylor, nice to have you with us.
Thanks very much.
And Dick Cates, nice to have you back as well.
Thank you, Larry, very much.
You know, I was thinking back before the show started, and when I was growing up, I grew up on a farm, and most of the farms were essentially taken over by the sons, mostly, sometimes the daughters, after learning about it from the parents. And that's, you know, I milked cows and did all that work when I was a kid. I left the farm and didn't go back, really. But why do we need a school now for beginning dairy and livestock farmers, Dick?
Well, thank you for the question. The question is pertinent. Jennifer and I take the position, and we've been in this business now for 12 years and had over 230 students go through, and about three quarters of those are farming, and about half of those that are farming have actually started their own business. Farming is a different situation today because we have fewer families that have young people who are going to take them over. We're getting an infusion of individuals from outside of agriculture who recognize that living on a piece of land, producing healthy food, taking care of the land and water is a service for society that is a very high calling. And we're getting intelligent, bright, and motivated people to do this work. It's good work.
And the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, maybe we should talk a bit about that. Jennifer, what's the organization all about? What's it all about?
Sure. It's a collection, really, as center implies, of people who work on a lot of alternative agriculture. It used to be called type of enterprises. Ours, with the school, happens to focus on dairy and livestock grazing, an approach of having your cattle outside and grazing them on pastures. And other parts of the center are involved in organic agriculture. A lot of them work with producers around the state who'd like to do different kinds of practices like integrated pest management and things in apple orchards, or who would like to have small vegetables on their own farm and be able to direct market it without having to produce a large amount of commodities. And then we support some university research also on some of these other practices that involve sustainable agriculture.
Hmm. Well, what type of person or people do you generally have at these schools? Can you talk a little bit about it? Are they young? Are they old? Are they...
Sure. The only thing, the tie that binds is that they all get up in the morning and they want to farm. We have young, we have old, we have those who have come, we have young and older, I should say, and we have those who have come from a farm family, and we have those who have come to farming because it's something that is in their heart, what they want to do. So we have quite a range, and that really makes it fun. And going back through the 12 years, now we're doing a 10-year survey, reconnecting with these folks and finding that so many of them have fulfilled or reaching their dreams in their work life and family life is very moving.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add that that our students come from a variety of backgrounds, and kind of getting back to what you were talking about, why do we need a school for beginning farmers? Mm-hmm. A number of them do come from farm backgrounds, and they're here to go to the short course, which is Madison's winter program from November mm-hmm. to March, and we're affiliated with that course, and we run that same schedule. But some of them, like myself, come from non-farm backgrounds. I grew up in Iowa, but I wasn't on a farm, and it's really unclear if you want a farm how to do that when you mm-hmm. don't have a family member to pass it on to you. And so part of what this program does for people is to be able to connect our students with the real farming community, with farmers out there who want to see other young people get started, even if they didn't come from a farm.
You know, and I'm wondering about it because as you look at land values and that sort of thing, even if a person wants to get into it, it can be, you know, financially a pretty difficult kind of thing to do if you don't inherit it from mom and dad.
We know that your callers will ask that question, but we can give you a little snippet of where we're at. We run our program as a business class. Mm-hmm. We offer different approaches. One of them is pasture management, but we have a number of different approaches. But we offer it as a business opportunity for students to think about how to create a business. And if you really think about agriculture, the necessity of being in the real estate business is not the same. It's not exactly a necessity if you want to milk cows. There are so many farms that are sitting vacant now, owned by people who would love to see them productive. And then they get a lower tax value, use tax assessment, they get a better tax rate. And so we see really creative models of young people controlling land, that is renting or leasing on a long-term basis, but not necessarily owning it first. They should own their capital income producing asset, that is their livestock, but not necessarily be in the real estate business.
Oh, and so they can, and that gets done.
It does get done. But it takes two parties, the landowner and the beginning farm families, to understand that this is an option that we need to pursue.
And do you help these folks get in contact with people? Or what's the approach that you take on that, Jennifer?
Sure, we sure do. Part of what we do is, as after the 15 weeks of instruction that we have in the classroom, which, by the way, involves not just university faculty, but also a number of outside people. We bring in lenders from the farming lending community, and we bring in a lot of farmers. Every week we have at least one, sometimes several farmers come in and talk about their farm business enterprise, too. So while they're in the program, students will already be meeting farmers from the region and from all over the state, actually. And then at the end of the program in the spring, any student who chooses to can do an actual on-farm internship where we match them with someone who has the kind of farm that they're really interested in, and they can spend 2 months up to 4 months or more if they want on this farm learning what it takes to run this farm enterprise.
Wow, that's a great way to match up the farmers with the people who want to farm and aren't farmers yet, I guess you could say. Dick Cates, director, Jennifer Taylor, assistant director of the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, talking with them about dairy and livestock farming and the Wisconsin School for Beginning Dairy and Livestock Farmers. We'll also be talking with them about the 4th annual Ride to Farm, which is a bike trip to raise endowment funds and awareness for the school. And we'll be visiting with them about that as well. You can join in with your own questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Pasture management is one of the topics then that you zero in on a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about the kinds of things that you deal with in pasture management? I'll tell you what, we better wait to do that because I'm just noticing now the clock, and it's we're approaching a look at the news. So we'll get to that topic. And again, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking with Dick Cates and Jennifer Taylor, I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the Wisconsin School for Beginning Dairy and Livestock Farmers, and really talking about dairy and farming in general a little bit, too, with our two guests today, Dick Cates, who's director, Jen Taylor, assistant director with the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. Glad to have you listening in. If you have some questions, maybe you're interested in this school. I mean, there's some openings there, and you can get involved, or maybe just you'd like to learn more about it anyway. Give us a call. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And as a matter of fact, let's go to Kim in Cross Plains. Kim, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was just wondering. It intrigued me. This is something I and my family have been wanting to do for a long time. I didn't even know about your school. But if you do your farm internship and then, you know, you do 2 to 4 months of learning, how do you pay your bills? How do you keep without, you know, quitting a job? I mean, you can go to school, but you can still keep your bills current. And then also my other question is, let's say if your credit is not as healthy, you know, and you're going in and this farmer's looking at you to possibly lend their land, but then they're looking to possibly put that land in your hands. They see that you do have talent, you're really serious, and you're really interested, but they're not looking at you as being necessarily a good candidate. So how does the school deal with both those?
Okay, let's turn to Dick Cates.
Sure, I'll take a shot at those. The first question asked about internships, and over the years, we've developed scholarships, endowment scholarships, that at least help offset some of the costs during the internship period. They're all in the names of families from Wisconsin. Some of them were in farming, and some left a rural place and wanted to provide for the opportunity for it to continue to be rural, so left scholarships. Generally, the interns live on the farms of the mentor family and take room and board there, and so some of the expenses are cut down.
Okay.
Related to the second question, if your credit isn't so good,
yeah.
Gee, a lot of us were in that situation when we started our businesses, and fortunately, our society is starting to get that.
Yeah.
One of the things that's offered in Wisconsin as a pilot program through the USDA Farm Service Agency is some guaranteed backing of payments on land contracts for new farmers purchasing from retiring farmers. Guaranteed payments by the government. It's a pilot program. I had a wonderful visit with Bill Bruins and John Lyon from Farm Bureau this morning. They are looking to introduce legislation or back legislation in Wisconsin that would make it easier for and less risky for retiring farmers to sell to new farmers. It's where we have to be.
Yes. That's excellent. Now, where can you find that, like online, so that we can really chew on this?
Yeah.
Sure. I'd be happy to give you an address.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah.
Yeah. So because we're housed in this Center for Integrated Ag Systems, I'll give you the exact internet address. It's www.cias.wisc.edu. And then if you want to get directly from there, you can click on some of the words that will take you to the school for beginning dairy and livestock farmers. But if you want to get directly to our school, you can add a slash and D-A-I-R-Y-S-C-H for dairy school.
Okay. And then was that C as in cat, I as in Indian, A as in apple, S as in Sam?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then is there a number also, or will all that be there?
Sure, that would be there, but I'd be happy to give you a number as well.
Okay.
We're at 608.
Yeah.
265-6437.
Oh, this is very wonderful. I'm glad it's in legislation. I bet it's on a lot of people's minds. And, you know, it, like I heard it said before, when you've had it, you know, you can kind of take it for granted because you know how hard the work is. But for us out here, boy, that want to get into it, it's a way of life, you know, a desire.
Yeah. Well, Kim, I appreciate your call very much.
Oh, thank you for your program. You do such a wonderful job.
All right. Thanks, Kim. I appreciate it very much. And by the way, we should mention that there's a free informational CD about the school, if I'm not mistaken. That's correct?
And what? Absolutely.
And that sort of covers the basics Dick?
We have a promotional CD that's available without charge. But in a sense, it's a reiteration of our website. So the website still, I think, is for those who have access, it's the best interactive up-to-date. We also have a CD for purchase for those who can't attend the school. It has 30 hours of instruction. And it's just remarkable. We have folks from all over the country that look into that, and it's $115 with the postage, and they'll look into that to see if they really want to spend the time and money to come to Madison.
Sure, and I'll just add a little bit about that. The CD set has videos of the actual classes. So you, in a way, you almost feel like you're there listening to the mm-hmm. people speak, because you can watch them and listen to their presentation of classes that happened a couple of years ago. And so we really encourage people, if they're not sure, they can take the time to come to the class to do it that way. And then another new option we have, we can get into in a little while if you want, is we now have a distance education component to our classroom. So you no longer have to come to Madison. We had two sites last year. One was in Reedsburg, Wisconsin, and the other was in Wausau, Wisconsin. We're going to add some more locations as well this coming year.
So in that one, will that be interactive then, that people can ask questions and so forth?
Exactly. This is a new approach for us, is to be able to use the web for delivery of the presentations live in real time. And so people will gather at a classroom-like location and have a local facilitator there who knows all about our program to meet with them and the rest of their classmates. And then they'll see up on the screen, they'll see the presenter's slides, and they'll hear their voice over the audio, and then be able to ask questions right back to the classroom in Madison at the same time.
So you don't have to come to Madison. And it's held, the classes, the hours themselves, is like a couple hours and an evening, or what is it? How do they work?
We like to structure it right in the middle of the day, because mm-hmm. now, especially with these distance sites, we're getting inactive farmers who are already out in the field or maybe milking cows morning and night, mm-hmm. and they just want to develop some more skills or work on a business plan. So we hold it from 11 in the morning to 1:15 in the afternoon.
Okay.
And that allows people to travel in and do it right in the middle of the day, generally once a week.
Okay, generally once a week, and runs for 15 weeks then.
Mm-hmm. It does, from November through March, and there's a bit of a break there around the holidays in the first of the year.
And who are the sponsors and supporters of this Beginning Farmers course?
Thanks for asking. We have been so fortunate to have support within the agricultural industry and across partners that we never would have imagined would have come to the table. But as most of the listeners out around Wisconsin know, our governor and our Secretary of Agriculture, Neil Sassoon, have really put on a high level the need to protect and preserve our working lands of Wisconsin. And so we've engaged mm-hmm. partners who are not part of the agricultural community, but recognize that what our school is doing is helping provide and promote a next generation on our working lands, which is culturally who we are in Wisconsin. So in short, some of those partners are American Transmission Company and Culver's Restaurants and Farm Credit mm-hmm. Services, both some of the local organizations as well as the state board, Organic Valley Family of Farms, and Town and Country Electric out of Appleton came to us and said, we believe in what you're doing. You're going to help us raise healthy local food and have a next generation to take care of our soil and water and land. Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, and then Wisconsin Cattlemen's, Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, Professional Dairy Producers of Wisconsin, Agribusiness Council. We've got it all.
I wonder, of course, when I think about dairy, I think about dairy cattle. What about dairy goats? Are you know, somebody might be interested in that also. Would that person be eligible and, get something out of your school?
Sure, Larry. They're more than welcome. In fact, we've had a few folks come through the program already who are from milking goat farms. And a lot of our programming can go across different livestock and animal species. We'll have some specifics on things like sheep production for milk or meat and goats. And then we have some general things like designing a milking parlor if you want to upgrade your barn to put in a low-cost milking parlor. And then, of course, all the pasture management strategies are pretty similar across different species. And we talk a lot about how to set up a good pasture management program for your farm situation. But yeah, the goat industry is really gearing up in Wisconsin. And so people are excited about getting more goat milk producers out there. And we welcome any and all interest to come through the program.
I'm wondering, as we think about, and just to go back to the dairy cattle for a minute, as we think about a grazing situation, how much of that goes on in the state right now, as opposed to sort of what you might consider the more traditional type of dairy farm?
Great question. Well, we happen to have sitting next to me Jennifer Taylor, who did a very thoughtful and thorough report, but I'll answer the question because I'll add a little bit to it. About a quarter of the farms in Wisconsin have some form of managed grazing. Hmm. And but what's interesting is of those young people who are starting, or not so young, that are starting into livestock farming, the percentage of grazing is nearly half of those farms that are starting. Let's think about why. That's the key. It's not this or that. This is better or not
right.
better. In Wisconsin, we are blessed by having a diversity of farm types, sizes, that can all utilize and help each other. But grazing is a good way to get started for a young person because the capital expenses are lower. Basically, you're letting the animal do a lot of the harvesting, and the housing requirements tend to be less. The removal of manure during the growing season is basically happens out on the pasture. Mm. Very appropriate. And some people love that approach. That's the Cates family farm is a grass-based business. It works for my family. Mm. We talk about other significant approaches that reduce capital requirements, such as a young person leases a barn that's empty, leases a few acres where they can put their cattle out to get some exercise, and purchases their feed. But what they do is they buy the animals, the cows that are going to produce their income, and so their overall expenses are so much lower than going out and buying a 300-acre farm and all the equipment.
Yeah. I'm going to put myself in the position of somebody who doesn't farm or hasn't farmed and has thought ahead a little bit when we talk about pasture grazing and thinking to themselves, well, what about November through April or so? What happens in a situation like that?
Sure, that's a great question. In fact, that's one of our topics that we have during the class is winter feeding and housing strategies for people who do that. And it really runs the gamut. You know, a lot of folks still have a barn that's serviceable that they can put animals in during the wintertime. Some people go to the opposite extreme and they so-called outwinter their animals, where they pick a spot of the farm that's low-lying, maybe down in a culvert, a ravine. And they have their dairy cows, or in more cases, often their beef cows, be outside during the winter months, as long as they feed them well and check on them a lot and provide them plenty of water. These can be really healthy animals. And then there are some intermediate strategies that tend to be a little bit lower cost, like you can put up a so-called greenhouse barn. It's a structure that looks a little bit like a horticulture greenhouse with a plastic roof and some a metal foundation that can last several years, 5 to 10 years, depending on the type of structure. And then, again, renting facilities and looking at putting some of your animals, if you're a milking operation, some of your animals that are not milking, heifers, young stock, at another farm down the road a little ways that's still handy, but where it's not being used. Maybe the farmers are retired and you can rent it from them and put your animals in that barn. So there's really a lot of creative strategies that people use to put this together.
Yeah, I was thinking about then, you must have to purchase then feed and so forth for the winter months at least.
Mm-hmm.
And just another question along the lines of, we'll go back to the summer and so forth. With pasture management, you probably have a little more work in some respect in terms of fencing and that sort of thing, because if you have to kind of move the animals around a little bit.
Yes. The situation is quite different than it was, when the famous study at Marshfield was done with managed grazing. Every single one of those fences in the 60s was a permanent fence, and it was run by an electric fencer that had very high current and could start fires. Petroleum was inexpensive, and so they found out that green chopping was pretty good option.
Yeah.
Now we're in a different situation. We have portable fencing, which can be moved around very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you want a perimeter fence that holds animals in case of a lightning storm. And we have fencers that have, they're called low impedance. They have very low current but high voltage, so they give a good pop, but they are very safe. And petroleum is in a different
stratosphere.
Is the word, yes. Things are different.
I just wanted to add to that in the sense of resources, too. Nowadays, because there are more grazers in the state, people who practice this approach of putting their animals out on pasture. There are also a number of suppliers of this kind of fencing and some inexpensive watering systems that you can put out in your farms. And then the amount of information out there, too. A number of the extension agents are much more familiar now with grazing than they might have been in years past. And then other groups around the state, like the Natural Resources Conservation Service, have grazing specialists who can help with all these details about planning the system on your own farm.
Okay. Well, let's take another call. Jackie in Stockton, Illinois, will go to you next. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I do live in Wisconsin. I'm just down here as a consultant. Anyways, I'm curious, the program of the school, beginning school, does it talk about organic farming, or is there any of that focus in it?
Yeah, let's go. Dick Cates?
Sure. What we try to do is provide for our students the options that are available to business entrepreneurs, beginning farmers, they are business entrepreneurs, the options that are available in Wisconsin today. Organic farming is one of those. We actually bring in a representative from Organic Valley to talk about how one might make a transition, what are the difficulties. We bring in a veterinarian who talks about the options in an organic system. When we started 12 years ago, there was very little interest in this. Now there's more. Our responsibility is to meet the needs and the realities out on the landscape. So, yes, that's becoming part of our curriculum. But the base of our curriculum is sound business planning, understanding what your goals are, what your strengths, and putting it all together with
putting
a business
it all together.
Plan.
Mm-hmm. But organics, and that's by role. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jackie.
No. Finish your comment about organics. I'm really interested in that. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to encourage some young farmers down here to go into organics. I just want to hear that. I have another question.
Sure. We provide organic options within our programming. What we try to do is ask our students to look at their business not just as a set of production strategies, but a set of marketing options, and figure out what can work for them. And so organics is becoming a very real possibility for some folks because of the strength, not just of the market, but of the strength of Organic Valley in Wisconsin. They are very, if you look across.
This is a cooperative we're talking about now.
It is a cooperative.
Very large cooperative.
And they're based in reality. They offer to their farmers what they can pay. They're not out there for in flash in the pan. They've been there for 20 years.
Go ahead.
Oh, my second question had to do about you mentioned that there are even older people applying to this. What are you talking about in terms of age of the people who are older?
Jennifer?
Sure. Well, back 12 years ago, I was an older student in my late 20s, but these days we have business people in their 40s coming to our class. They don't take off of work. They just come to our seminar once a week. And then we had a student in his early 60s this year who was retiring from a previous career onto a farm situation that his in-laws had, and he wanted to know how he could best run that. And so he came to all of our classes. So when we say a range, we really mean it.
I imagine there's a bunch of those old hippies out there who the dream is, well, maybe now I can be a farmer.
Exactly. There you go. Well, you're all welcome.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call very much. I want to get to the fourth annual Ride to the Farm, because we haven't talked about that. And that's tell us about this 200-mile bike ride. Jennifer, you want to talk about that?
Sure, I can start off. This is something now, as you said, we're in our fourth year. We've done three times. We started it because of some good friends of ours up in north central Wisconsin who are agricultural vo-tech teachers in the high schools teaching ag. And they happen to be avid bike riders. And they said, well, you know, what can we do? What cause can we support when we ride our bicycles from the Independence and Bloomer area down to Madison for our annual convention in June? And so they looked around and they found our program on the web and talked to Dick and said, and it really turned out to be a good match, something that we wanted to do to try and get folks more aware of our program. And they were really eager to participate. So now what we have is this year, starting on June 10th and going for 3 days, we'll have a group of people riding bicycles from farm to farm in the beginning of the trip to stop at some of our graduates' enterprises. And that's just so exciting to be able to see what they're doing and celebrate their successes. And then we'll also take a route that goes down through some of our sponsors' areas, including a Culver's restaurant. And when we do this, we just invite people to come and see what we're all about, talk about the program, and support some of our activities with their presence and with any donations.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is fun. This year, one of the individuals that started the ride, his name is Merle Richter. He's now emeritus as well in the FFA from Bloomer. He will receive induction in the FFA Hall of Fame upon our arrival to Madison to the annual state FFA convention. Merle will be a keynote speaker and be inducted into the Hall of Fame. We also try to pass the message as we travel of the significance and importance of a next generation on our working lands, on our farms. And we try to engage a public who might not otherwise know how to get involved. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we're trying to raise an endowment for our school, but we're also trying to keep a very important idea alive in our state.
And I suppose people could join even for a day or so. Probably the best thing is to just go to the website. You can find out some more information about the bike ride and about the school, and all of that's right there available on the Integrated Ag Systems website. And I want to thank you both for being with us today. It's a real pleasure.
Can I get time for one more comment?
Yep, about 15, 20 seconds.
One of the aspects of our program that's priceless that we could never have predicted is the creation and building of community around and to assist a next generation. Those mentors, whether they be in banking or farming, they have been so valuable. And that's what keeps the young people floating and alive.
Well, I'll tell you what, go to the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems website. If I put that in, I'm sure you're going to get it, and you'll find out a lot more about the bike ride and about the classes. Thanks to Dick Cates and Jennifer Taylor, and thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store.